episode 65 of the top 10 rated podcast created for authors by authors. This week, we're talking about how to bring your setting to life. And with us for this discussion is best-selling author Amy Reichard, who writes amazingly transportive romantic novels, most of which have a twist of magic inside. But before we get started, I want to remind you that each week at Write Your Best Book, we cover topics that are meant to help authors through the process of writing their books. But believe it or not, this podcast episode that you're listening to is the finale of each week. I know, it's my fault I didn't explain it better. We actually begin the week's topic discussion with our newsletter, which goes out every Monday morning to over 2,000 subscribers and counting. We dive into the topic of the week and get the conversation started. So be sure that you have subscribed to our newsletter by visiting our website. Again, it's writeyourbestbook.com. And if free, weekly actionable advice on writing tips isn't enough of an incentive to sign up, I am so thrilled to announce our newest free resource we're giving to anyone who signs up. It's called the Ultimate Book Launch Planner, which is a digital planner you can use on your computer, tablet, or phone to plan out your entire book launch and even your writing schedule beforehand. Each colorful page is fully editable, and we pack the 50 plus pages full of planners from annual, weekly, monthly, all that. Writing schedule tips, pre-writing checklist, an expense tracker, contact page for you to keep track of your editor, their fee, all those things, word count tracker, and even a list of our favorite resources for authors that have clickable links and some discount codes. So be sure that you sign up for it while it's still available, because we change them out every few months. But then follow us on social media. Across the board, it's at Write Your Best Book, where we'll post each day more specific tips on that week's topic. We follow back as much as possible, and we do our best to engage with every single comment and question. Then, on Thursdays, we release that week's blog post, which is an even deeper dive into the topic of the week. We'll remind you on our social media accounts every Thursday morning when the new post drops, so keep an eye out there. And finally, yes, the podcast does wrap up the week's topic, and an in-depth conversation with an accomplished best-selling author is more like a fireside chat discussion. This allows you to get actionable tips from experienced authors who have been there, done that, and got the t-shirt. And now, with that out of the way, let's talk about settings. Your setting is about much more than just where your book was taking place. It should be a character all its own, and it should completely allow the reader to be transported magically to wherever our protagonist may be and enter her world entirely. But how can we do that? And most importantly, how can we do that when we're constantly told not to overdescribe settings and to avoid info dumping? That's where practice comes in. It usually doesn't come naturally to most authors, but with practice and learning all you can about the craft of writing a great novel, you can put advice like this into practice. To discuss this matter further, let's dive on into my conversation with Amy Reichard as we discuss bringing your setting to life. Okay, welcome back to Write Your Best Book, the podcast that is rated top 10 that's created by authors for authors. And as promised, on the show today, we have Amy Reichard, who is going to talk with us about bringing your book's setting to life. I'm so excited. We have not covered setting at all this year, and it's super important. So let's start by just saying hi to Amy, and thank you for coming on the show with us this week.
Thank you so much for having me, Christina. I'm so excited to be here. I love podcasts. So
I do too. I'm kind of obsessed, and that's why I had to start my own.
That's the only way my house gets clean, is I put my ear pods in and I go clean.
That's what I'm driving. I mean, there's all kinds of times you can listen to these great podcasts. There's so much out there now. If you can find it, it's on a podcast. If you need to know how to do it, it's on a podcast.
Agreed. So, right.
start with you telling my listeners a bit more about you, your books, and basically your journey from when you first started writing to how you got to where you are today.
Excellent. So I'm Amy E. Reichert. I am a Wisconsin author. All of my books are set in Wisconsin. My fifth one, The Kindred Spirit Supper Club, is about to come out on April 20th. And all of my books, I like to describe them as comfort reads. I write books that have happy endings. There's usually romance in them, family drama. But at the end, you kind of want to hug them when you're done because they just make you feel better about life. So some people call it feel-good fiction. So it's sort of in that realm. But I like to, it's very important for me to set them in Wisconsin and explore what this state has to offer. But we'll get into that a little bit more later. About my journey, it started, let's see, it's 2021. It started in 2010. I was a stay-at-home mom. Before that, I was a technical writer. So I'd never been that person who always wanted to be an author. It never occurred to me that I could write creatively. So in 2010, when I was staying home, my kids were about ready to start going to school full time. And it was time for me to think about what the next stage was going to be, because I couldn't envision myself being at home all the time and not having something to do. Because that would mean I'd have to like be better at cleaning, and I didn't want to be. So I started hearing about this thing called NaNoWriMo, National Novel Writing Month, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with. And I started thinking, gosh, that sounds like a lot of fun. And I started thinking of an idea set in Milwaukee with a chef and a restaurant critic. And I started writing. So in 2010, that year, I opened up my document. And it took me almost 5 years from when I started that document till it got published. I kept revising. I kept learning about how to write. I kept researching the publishing process and how you got an agent and how you got a publishing deal. So I did a lot of homework and I did a lot of learning because I had no clue what I was doing. I listened to a lot of podcasts like yours to help me learn how to do this. There is a craft to it. So I finally got published. And then my first book came out in 2015, second one, 2016, then 2017, then 2018. And then I was burnt. I was exhausted. I don't know how there are so many authors that put out multiple books a year. They are amazing. I don't know how they do it. They're much, much more efficient than I am. So I took a little bit of time off to kind of regroup. And now my fifth book is coming out, The Kindred Spirit Supper Club. And I just a little bit about that. I don't know if you want to talk about it now or later. But the book is about Sabrina Monroe. She's forced to move back home because she's broke and has to move into her childhood bedroom. They live in Wisconsin Dells, which is a really special part of the state. It's right in the middle of it. It is part super tourist attraction, kitschy t-shirt shops, and part beautiful landscape with sandstone cliffs and the winding Wisconsin River. So it's this really weird dichotomy going on there that I think is just special. So she has to move back there. She becomes a duck tour boat guide, ends up working for her childhood bully. And then there's this mysterious supper club owner who moves to town and starts getting her attention. And it's very important to her that she keep her family secret, a secret. And that secret is that they can see spirits, the recently undead, who the women in her family then help with any unfinished business. With an exception of Molly, who has been around for about 100 years because they could never resolve her unfinished business. And she is Sabrina's best friend and is determined to help her find a happy ever after. So it's a lot of fun and it's got the ghost element, but it's not creepy. I like to reassure people.
Well, that sounds amazing, Amy. And I think it's funny to hear someone say, it's not my lifelong, everybody always says, oh, I wanted to do this my whole life. I'm like you. I didn't either. So it's refreshing to meet someone who kind of came at it a little bit later in life, like us gals. But it's a lot of people, I think, though, can relate to that story. So thank you for sharing. As you know, the topic for this discussion is bringing your setting to life. And you touched on that a little bit with your Wisconsin, which, I mean, I think I could have maybe guessed with your accent that you're from Wisconsin. That's
horrible.
Maybe. I don't know. But it's great. No, we have all kinds on the show, so it's fine. And everybody has to tolerate my Southern Kentucky accent every week. So, you know. But anyway, you talked about a little bit setting your books in the area because you want to give some credit to that area and explore the area. And I can relate to that because I did the same thing with my books. I always felt like there are no books set in Kentucky. They're always New York or Hollywood or, okay, come on. But go ahead and tell me the biggest lesson that you have learned on your writing journey when it comes to creating the best setting for your books.
I think it's very, very important when with setting to make it a make it part of the story so that it really couldn't take place anywhere else. My stories couldn't take place in Ohio or New York. They would have to be here because there's landmarks, because there's cultural elements from Wisconsin. And I think it's really, there's part of the lifestyle in Wisconsin, which I think is a part of setting, is how people go about their days, how they handle the snowstorms, how they deal with, 30 degree days in April, because that happens. And we still wear our flip-flops because it's okay, because that's what we do. I still wear, I don't wear a winter coat most days all through winter because I'm used to it. It doesn't, I go from the car to the house. You don't need a coat. That's what I think is really important about setting, is making it so incorporated into your story that it couldn't be anyplace else. That's the biggest lesson I think I've learned.
I love that. And I think that's going to be probably, even though it's our first answer, the takeaway. I think that's a great point. And it's a great place to start because there's so many different ways you can set your story, different places. Is it a real town? Is it a quasi real town? Is it totally fantasy? Whatever it is, I love that. Make it so that there's nowhere else it could be set. I love it. Good tip. Great way to start. So let's move on. What's your favorite setting of the ones that you've created so far in your book? I know they were all mostly Wisconsin, but surely you have one you love the best.
So that's such an interesting question, because to me, there's places where it's set. I have books in the Dells. I have books in Door County. I have books set in Milwaukee. But then there are sort of the little micro settings where, it is the, like in The Simplicity of Cider, which is my book that's set in Door County, which is like a vacation spot in Wisconsin. It takes place on a family orchard that's invented. And I think that's probably my favorite one at this point, because there's just a little bit of magic there. The orchard has a personality. There is a part of the orchard where there's all these heirloom variety of apples. They call them the looms. They're sort of older, craggier, bigger, and they have a personality. I really liked that about that setting, that it had this little magical element, and it was fictitious, but it was set in the larger real place. There is a book I'm writing right now, which is going to be my next book, which I really can't say much about, but there is sort of a similar concept where set inside a bigger familiar place is this fictional little something that I created that I'm really excited about that is also up there. So that's probably, and of places that are real, I really did enjoy writing about the Wisconsin Dells in this last book because it's such a crazy place.
Let me ask you this, it's a little off script, but I'm curious, are all of your books, it seems like there's a maybe an underlying theme of not even magic, real magic, but maybe a little sparkle of magic kind of sprinkled in your books? Are all of them like that, or is that just a couple?
It's just a couple at this point. It's something that has become
thematic.
I'm going that direction. So my first two, there really isn't any sparkle. There's a little sparkle in The Simplicity of Cider, which is my third book. The fourth one also doesn't have magic, but I think there's some people that, I mean, depending on how you look at it, there's a few things people could be like,
Add your own sparkle in there a little bit.
Correct. And then obviously in the most recent one, I have a rom-com loving ghost and lots of other spirits that show up. So that has a big hint. And then my next book also has a magical realism element. I just really like to take I like things that are just a little off normal.
That's why so many people relate to magical realism, and even as far as just full out fantasy, is because we're reading because we want to escape, you know? So I get it. And I mean, I write crime fiction, so mine are set in the most realistic places possible. Or somewhere in their book, I did the same thing. I put a little sparkle in there, a little extra supernatural, and it's probably my favorite. I like that ability to be set in a real place, because we all have certain different beliefs. You know, like some people are more cynical and realistic and set grounded. There's no way what we see is what we get. Then there's others like me. I'm somewhere in between. Like, I don't really believe in ghosts, but I love the idea that they could be real. It's like so fun.
I feel like I'm right there too. I don't really think there's a ghost hanging out back here, but yeah. I'd be okay if there was.
Exactly.
It's not a chain dragging one that's going to scare me.
Right. As long as they're good friendly ghosts, we're good.
That's right. Right.
So in my author coaching programs, I always ask my clients to, quote, map out their setting before they even begin writing as part of the planning process. And I believe this process not only get familiar with our setting, but to make sure that we're truly thinking about all the elements that we need to include as we write. So what are some common mistakes that you see other authors making when it comes to writing their book setting?
I think the biggest mistake people can make about setting is spending too much time describing every tiny little detail that you've created. Because yes, when you map out a setting, you have figured out, okay, my character in this garden that they spend a lot of time in has planted daffodils here and tulips here and hydrangeas here, and this is why they did it all, and this is the colors, and they know exactly what's where. As a reader, I don't need to know that. Unless for some reason the fact that the hydrangeas are next to the peonies is crucial to the plot, I don't need to know that. So it's good that the author does, but don't spend pages and pages telling me that. You can just tell me that in a paragraph.
Or less.
A few sentences. And I think that's especially...
colors was, you know, there you go. Say it in one sentence.
Yes. I mean, because you need to know that in your head. But I, as a reader, I don't want to know that. I know some people love that kind of deep description. And there are books and authors that are just brilliant at it. But I think for a lot of people, especially in commercial fiction that is plot centric, that is going to slow things down.
Absolutely agree. And that's kind of what I use to define it with people. But I see all these people that do it. Yeah, but you're probably reading more literary fiction. You know, you're probably not reading much contemporary, or, you know, I mean, there are some that do it that way, but I agree. If you can effectively, and this is where the craft comes in. You were talking earlier about having, and that's my biggest lesson I teach my clients, is you've got to learn the craft first. But whenever you learn it, that's one of the biggest things, is it takes talent, but you've got to find a way to kind of strike a balance between over-describing every detail, but find a way to say it so that you get the same point across, the same visual, the same experience in less than a paragraph. So if you can do that, and it takes practice, but you can do it.
It does take practice. And it's okay if it ends up there in an early draft.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe it should be there. And it might take a few books before you even can recognize it in your own writing, because that's part of learning. You learn how to recognize your flaws. And that's why having beta readers is so important, or critique partners is so important, because they can tell you, even if they don't know why, they can say, I was really bored at this part.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the questions you can ask. Have I used too much description there? And maybe that's a place I could trim.
That's another great point, is that let's not stress too much about being perfect in that first draft. That's another thing I tell my clients, is stop trying to be perfect, because the first draft is not going to be perfect.
It's not.
So don't worry about it. I love that. You've got some great points. And so on that note, Melissa, before you give us all the other rest of the goodies, I have to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor this week. We've got a good one lined up. So let's take a break and we'll be right back with Amy and we'll finish our discussion. Okay, guys, the absolute number one tool for helping you create a compelling, transportive setting can be found on one of my favorite website resources for authors. It's called One Stop for Writers. It's run by my two good friends, Angela Ackerman and Becca Puglisi, who you may know from their famous author thesaurus, The Emotions Thesaurus. And if you don't know, you need to get one on your desktop. And all those companion books that go with it. At One Stop, they have all the essential tools an author needs to develop their characters, create a transportive setting, map out a timeline, world building, and even plotting and outlining, and oh my gosh, so much more. It's super user-friendly, unlike some writing tools we may know about. And there's literally no program like it anywhere on the internet, or really anywhere for that matter. And I so much want you to try this amazing site out that I've got a special exclusive discount code for you to add to their already affordable subscription rate. If you enter the code WriteYourBest15, the number 15, when prompted during checkout, you'll be able to take 15% off their already low monthly fee. Trust me, you guys, this platform is a game changer for authors everywhere. It changed the game for me, which is why I will shout it from the rooftops every chance I get. Now, let's get back into my discussion with Amy on settings and get some practical advice on how we can use her tips and then apply them using One Stop for Writers. Okay, we are back in the studio with Amy, and we're going to wrap up our discussion, but we still got some great stuff to talk about on how to make your settings stand out, be realistic, be all the things it should be. So Amy, what advice do you have for fellow authors on avoiding, we talked about it briefly before the break, but how do we avoid that info dumpy setting description during the writing process?
So great. This is such a good one because I really struggled with this myself in my early books. And first of all, when you're writing your first draft or even your second draft, don't worry about it. Just write whatever you need to write because you need to get that all in there. You're just at that point, it's about getting ideas on the page, and it's okay that it's there, but it's the following revisions that are so important. Literally when I was doing The Coincidence of Coconut Cape, which is my first book, I went through those drafts and I did it multiple times, and I highlighted everything that was straight description, that was any kind of info dump, any kind of exposition that felt too long. And then I went back and I looked at each of those and I asked myself questions. Does this need to be there? Number one, if it needs to be there, if the reader needs this information, is this the right place? If it's the right place, is there another way for me to convey this? Because it also, I had a real problem with show versus tell, which is a whole other, I'm sure, multiple episodes. So how else can I show that information or share that information? And that's really a great tip for setting is, you know, if a character goes into a room, you're inclined to want to describe what the room looks like and then move into the action. But there is a way to overlap that. So how can you weave in the description of that room into the action that's happening? Hey, maybe they're sitting into the green velvet couch. Maybe the person is staring at the window across the room. So those are actions that are weaved in that will allow the room, or allow the setting to come to life during the action. So there, my two cents.
Hey, just by the way, y'all didn't hear this part. We had to take a break because my couch was delivered like in the middle of Amy's first answer. So we had to pause for a second, but just so you know, I just bought a velvet couch. It's not green, but it is velvet, and I'm so excited.
I actually have a green velvet chair in the corner over here. Here, I'll show you.
Oh, I love it. It's got that's my style, girl. I love it. Y'all, I wish y'all could see the couch or the chair. It's very, very glam. Very glam.
I love it. It's very fun.
More things to talk about. Let's see. Okay. Very common, but a disastrous mistake that many new authors make, and it's okay because we all do it, is starting their story off right on page one, line one, with a setting description or giving a highly detailed, long, drawn out description of their setting. How can we strike a balance? And I like what you just said earlier about weaving it in. Give us some technical. Like, how can we strike a balance between not info dumping, but still we want to give those details so that we paint a vivid picture for the reader?
Yes. So for me, with all information in a book, from setting to character development to secrets, it is all about when can I share that information at the last possible moment that the reader needs to know it? Because then that helps us solve that info dumping problem when you can parse it out over the whole book. And setting, I think, is key, because with setting and when you're in that first chapter, the first thing your reader needs to care about is your characters. And if they don't care about your characters, they're sure not going to care about where your character is. So first we need to become attached to that character. And I like to think of it as like in a movie, when you're zoomed in close on a person and their face, you don't, all you know is like maybe they're outside, maybe they're in a forest or a meadow, but you really don't know much beyond that, because that's really all the reader needs to know. They're outside in the forest, maybe they're looking through the trees and they have an arrow, that they're a bow and arrow. And as the book progresses, you can kind of zoom out and show more of the setting and weave it in that way. So that's kind of how I think about it. It can be challenging because you do kind of want to set things up so that people understand we're in this magical land and there's unicorns and fairies, but they don't need to know that yet. Chances are they might even know that from the book cover. So that's kind of a tool. When you go in, you don't have to lay everything out in that first chapter. So that's my two cents, is to start small and then expand as the book goes.
I love it. And let's combine your strategy is zoom in, zoom out, which I agree with mine. I always tell my clients sprinkle. So also once you start to zoom out a little bit, I always say sprinkle little details here and there, instead of once you start to zoom out, you still don't want to even then dump, you know, you still want to. But I love that that visual, because that gives us a visual of zoom in like you would see in a movie. You know, you'd see the character, maybe a tear stream down their eye or whatever. And then you get an idea of where, because that character is more important. And I love the advice you've given us so far. So I hate to even have to wind it down, but we do. So any final advice for my listeners on creating and even writing their story setting that we may not have covered?
I think you need to make your setting interesting. Always. And this is not original advice. I want to say I read about it in On Writing by Stephen King, I think.
Oh my gosh. I've said it before. If you haven't read On Writing by Stephen King, you shouldn't be writing.
But the idea.
I'm exaggerating, but I always say it's the Bible for writers. Like you should write, you should read it.
So good. But the idea is that you're setting whatever action is happening in the most interesting place possible. And I will use the example from the Kindred Spirit Supper Club that's coming out. In the first chapter, the first scene is set in a water park. The Wisconsin Dells is the water park capital of the world. So it was sort of a natural setting. I know. So not only is it sort of in an interesting, unexpected place, but it allows for, so that's there. And then it allows for crazy things to happen. So my character, and this is actually based on real life, there was a brawl food fight in the middle of a water park over someone stealing chairs. It's on YouTube. You can Google it. So it really, really, that idea really amused me that, okay, now we're in a water park and my main character gets smacked in the face with one of those giant plastic refillable margarita glasses. That also is the, and that's how she ends up having her meet cute with the romantic interest in the book. So here she's covered in slush. That is because she's in a water park. If they were in a living room or they were on the street, that couldn't have happened there. So that's why the setting was so important. This was something that could happen there. And it allowed the sort of an interesting beginning. So to me, always think about a more interesting setting than where you are, and how being in that interesting setting could then influence the action in the scene and perhaps cause tension. So that is my little tip that we haven't talked about yet.
I love it. And just to expand on it a little bit, that is, I have never even thought about that. So I love that, because not only that, if you're a little stuck on your plot maybe, or even where you're going to go, that's one strategy you could use. Maybe come up with an interesting setting first. Like, okay, I know I'm writing a book about a romantic comedy. How do I make this different? And there they go again. I can't help it. My listeners are used to my damn dogs. They're used to it.
There's some special guest stars.
Yeah, every week. But just take that. And then that might actually lead into ideas you haven't even thought of as far as plot line goes. So that is a perfect place to end it, even though I don't want to. We got to go so my listeners don't get like, okay, we've heard enough. But before we do, I do want to give you an opportunity. Tell us all the things, like how can we follow you, find your books and buy them, sign up for your newsletter, anything you want us to know. And we'll also drop this stuff in the show notes.
Fabulous. So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at A-E and then my last name, Reichert. So A-E-R-E-I-C-H-E-R-T. I am on Facebook at Amy E. Reichert, because A.E. Reichert was used for my personal account, but I never use anymore.
All my platform, everything is Write Your Best Book, except for, I think it was Pinterest. And I'm like,
Yeah, I know. And then my website, which is really the place to go because you can find everything else, is amyereichert.com. And you can sign up for my newsletter there. And I'm just about ready to do a major revamp of my newsletter and start doing regular giveaways and just being a better newsletter owner. I don't even think I've posted on my newsletter yet about my new book coming out.
I mean, oops. It just somewhat slipped my mind.
I don't know if this is something you've ever talked about with your listeners, but the social media and the promotion part of writing is such a giant portion these days that you can only do so much.
I was thinking about that in the car this morning. I had to run an errand and I was just like, I haven't posted on YouTube. And I started thinking of all these things I haven't done, but then I thought, but at the same time, I have done, like, how am I ever going to get it all? You're not at all.
Do your best.
Exactly. Do your best. That's all you can do. All right, Amy, it's been a wonderful conversation. I've had such a good time. Probably my favorite so far this year. I'm excited.
And thank you so much for having me on, Christina. This was a lot of fun. This was my first official event for the book stuff. So this was a great start.
I'm glad you said that. What is your release date?
My release date is April 20th. Okay. And you'll be able to buy the book wherever you like to buy books.
Okay.
So on my website, there are places where they can go and get signed copies.
I think I'll do that too, right? Yeah. I have my wall back here. These are all my signed copies of all my friends and collaborators. Yeah, so I'll go get one.
Yeah, I have one of those shelves too. But really, it needs a bigger bookshelf at this point.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. Thank you, Amy, for stopping by. And we'll see you next week. Bye, Amy.
Bye. Thank you.
Okay, as I mentioned briefly during our discussion, my best advice to writers when it comes to describing settings is to sprinkle bits of information like breadcrumbs or, better yet, confetti throughout your scene. Drop a little hint here and a clue there, and before you get to the end of your chapter, your reader will have a good idea of where and when this story is taking place. And that's another thing. Don't forget to clue the reader in on your time period / your era. That's often overlooked. It's not enough to just put a subheading at the top with a date. We need to pretend that's not there and just show the reader, not tell, when the book is set, just like we show them where the book is set. Let's say you're writing a historical romance set in the late 1700s. Certain clues might give away the fact that it takes place a long time ago, like the lack of contraction used in dialogue and narrative, and so on. But you can also drop hints by using points of reference. Maybe your character mentions something about the latest current fashion, or the president, if there is one at that time, or the war going on behind the scenes. Little hints like this can easily tell the reader when the story takes place without it being force-fed to them. And finally, be sure to incorporate as many of the five senses into your setting description as possible. Don't just tell me that your protagonist sees a ball field when she walks into a park. Show me where she is by having her, say, smell the roasting hot dogs, hear the screeching of metal as children swing on a swing set, or she feels the grass crunch beneath her thin-soled flip-flops. Little tricks like this can make all the difference in your setting and help transport your reader wherever you want them to go. That's all the time we have for this week's episode. Be sure to hit the subscribe button and keep an ear out for next week's episode. I'm in the process of confirming a super huge Instagram famous author guest host for this summer. And trust me, you don't want to miss that one. Talk soon. And in the meantime, go write your best book. This is
Open your mind, open the front.